DW Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to Africa Link with me, Assumpta Latus.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Feel free to share this audio and give us your thoughts and feedback on the stories we are covering.
Coming up, United Nations Security Council is expected to renew MONUSCO's mandate in the DR Congo. We hear reactions from Beni, DRC.
I think that MONUSCO can stay here because there are many young Congolese working there. MONUSCO contributes to the development of Beni and our country.
Germany's federal cabinet is launching new German Africa policy guidelines. How new is this policy?
The government is defining five areas of cooperation, and most of them are not really new. I mean, it says Germany wants to help in the areas of peace and security.
Stay tuned for all that and more right here. But first, let's hear what is going on around the globe.
DW News.
I'm Kai Dombach with the DW News. The British Parliament will vote this evening on non-binding initiatives to determine the level of parliamentary support for alternatives to Prime Minister Theresa May's unpopular EU withdrawal agreement. Among the proposals that might be considered, they may vote on not leaving the European Union after all, holding another referendum, and backing a no-deal Brexit. The UK has an extended deadline to come up with a plan to leave the EU. They have until April 12 to make the decision whether to leave the EU or not. Pope Francis is to visit three African nations that were ravaged by Cyclone Idai. The Pope will visit Mozambique, Madagascar, and Mauritius in September. This will be the second time that a pope has visited Mozambique since John Paul II did so 30 years ago. Meanwhile, Mozambique has confirmed its first cases of cholera following the devastating cyclone. Mozambique's National Director of Medical Assistance, Usene Ise, said the cases were confirmed in the port city of Beira.
Of course, we'll spread at the moment. We'll spread. Because, you know, cholera is an epidemic situation. You see, when you have one case, you have to expect that you will have more cases in the community. Therefore, the health workers are there in the communities, work hard with communities, how to organize them, how to prevent, how to treat water and everything to prevent the spread of the cholera.
The death toll from the storm is over 700 and is expected to climb further. This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. The former head of Interpol, Meng Hongwei, has been expelled from the Chinese Communist Party. Meng was elected Interpol president in 2016, but his tenure was cut short after he was detained by Chinese authorities on corruption charges. Expulsion from the party is usually the last step before a suspect is sent to trial and near certain conviction. The United Nations is scheduled to vote late Wednesday on whether they will renew funding for its mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The peacekeeping mission is the largest and most expensive operation, comprising some 17,000 military personnel and 1,500 police officers. And finally, India shot down one of its satellites in space during a test of an anti-satellite missile. Prime Minister Narendra Modi handled the test as a success and said this means that India is establishing itself as a space power. India is now the fourth nation to have an anti-satellite defense system. The announcement comes just weeks before the country's general election. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
Welcome back to the program. That is Africa Link. And today in the studio, it's me, Assumpta Latus.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. It's a pleasure to have your company, not just on our partner radio stations, but also on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We have a number of you writing to us there already. Waleku Kem, and we have Magden Wangang, and many more. Tell us what you think about these stories. And don't forget to share the audio.
That's right. We begin in New York, where the United Nations Security Council is expected to renew MONUSCO's mandate in the DR Congo. The Council is planning to extend the mandate of the mission by 9 months instead of 1 year. You know why? Because the UN isn't really sure that the newly elected president will be able to deal with the mission.
In an interview with DW, the head of the UN peacekeeping mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo, MONUSCO, Leila Zehugi, acknowledged that there are still huge challenges ahead. Although she thinks the security situation has improved, many locals have divided opinions about MONUSCO's role. Our correspondent John Kanyunyu spoke to some of the residents. Take a listen.
I think that MONUSCO can stay here because there are many young Congolese working there. MONUSCO contributes to the development of Beni and our country. The former president hasn't made it easy for them. With this new president, they can collaborate better and do their job well. Let's give them another chance.
Let these people leave, because we will kill people here when they're here, and we don't know what they're doing here. People are suffering in their presence. Let them leave. That's what I have to say. We have a government that must take its responsibilities head on to protect us, because this task is theirs.
Beni residents there speaking about the extension of the MONUSCO mandate. Now, the United Nations has been present in the DR for about two decades. MONUSCO is one of its biggest and most expensive missions. Its annual budget is about $1.11 billion. Wow.
Yeah, and of course, Assumpta, we have a lot of feedback. We have a lot of comments from our listeners and many of the people who wrote to us.
Exactly. And we did actually post a question saying that should the UN extend the mandate of the peacekeeping mission in Congo this evening? And apart from the comments that we have is one from Gabriel Chima. You're saying if they have been there for up to two decades, yet terror still subsists upon $1.1 billion being budgeted annually, it then means they are not there to keep or maintain peace, but are there for business through the conflict.
Antabong Harrison shares the same sentiments. He says if for two decades they have not resolved the problem that brought them there, then they themselves are the problem, meaning they don't want the problem to be resolved because of what they benefit.
Now, Emmanuel Nganyila, you're saying the U.S. and its allies are there for business. Conflict makes easier loot Congolese natural resources.
And Edwin Gang says once a U.N. peacekeeping mission is deployed to an armed, troubled nation, their stay is indefinite. And he goes on to say the U.N. has failed in her objectives to prevent conflicts and to mitigate ongoing armed conflicts. Those are your comments.
Right. And Tanua Gevergo, you're saying for two decades, but yet no solution? That is insane, and enough grounds to demolish anything connected with them. That yearly amount, if it was invested for 5 years in meaningful activities, there would have been no reason to fight further. What do you think?
Yeah, of course, I think everyone is skeptical because they've been there for so long, as we get from the comments and also what Guterres himself said, they intend to cut the mission down. So
right. We still have so many comments here. We'll read them at any time when we get more time. But now let's go on.
And now to Berlin, where Germany's federal cabinet is launching new German Africa policy guidelines. Various ministries under the auspices of the Federal Foreign Office have been working on the policy for over a year.
The goal of these guidelines is to coordinate numerous German initiatives on Africa, ranging from the Marshall Plan to Compact with Africa. How will German Africa policy look like in the future? Our Berlin-based correspondent Daniel Pohls has been following the events.
Well, Germany is much more involved in Africa than it was in the past. You mentioned different initiatives such as the Marshall Plan with Africa that came out of the Development Ministry and the Compact with Africa that the Ministry of Finance came up with some years ago. And there was need to coordinate those different initiatives by coming up with a blueprint. So the new Africa policy guidelines that were launched today are basically a blueprint which outlines the areas of German involvement in Africa.
And how will German Africa policy look like in the future?
Well, the government is defining five areas of cooperation, and most of them are not really new. I mean, it says Germany wants to help in the areas of peace and security. It wants to support economic growth and jobs. It wants to contribute to controlling migration flows, so in other words, to aim at legalizing migration and prevent illegal migration. It wants to increase cooperation with African governments at an international level, and it wants to increase cooperation with civil society. So at first glimpse, this all doesn't really look new. And on top of that, I mean, Germany already announced 2 years ago that it would change its development policy. So there are some new elements in here. On the broader lines, it's not really anything new. But when you look closer, there are new features there. For instance, there's no much more emphasis now on cooperation with African governments. So I think Germany is moving away from that traditional view where Africa was an aid recipient, and it's acknowledging that Africa has much more importance and plays a much more important role, for example, in international affairs. There's a lot of mentioning that Germany wants to cooperate more with African governments on global issues such as trade, as climate change, and as UN reform. And the second issue that is also new is that the guidelines say that Germany wants to do more to explore its colonial past in Africa. Also, there was no mention of that in most of the previous strategies.
Cooperation, or keyword. It's not a one-way kind of a thing. It has to be kind of reciprocal. How are African countries involved in all that?
Well, it depends on the different initiatives. Of course, there are regular negotiations between Germany and African governments as far as development assistance is concerned, negotiations about the areas where Germany should be involved, which programs should be undertaken, and also about the amount of money that Germany is going to contribute within a certain period of time. So there are negotiations, obviously, with African governments where both sides sit together at the table. But from an outsider's view, it's pretty difficult to say who is having the upper hand here. Is it really partnership? Of course, also there are these pledges to say that Germany wants to cooperate closer with African governments on areas such as climate change. But I think it remains to be seen how this partnership is going to look in practical terms now in day-to-day political life.
This is not the first time that Germany is coming up with something like this. There have been many strategies and initiatives, and it has been a little bit hard to understand which ministry is dealing with what. Will this now help to coordinate those initiatives?
Well, the German government says yes, but a lot of critics have doubts about that, because these new Africa policy guidelines do not replace the strategies such as the Marshall Plan or the Compact with Africa. They're going to remain in place, and we are going to still have different ministries being involved in projects and programs in Africa, such as the Development Ministry, the Finance Ministry, the Ministry of Commerce, Trade and Industry, and the Ministry of Environment and the like. So it really remains to be seen. The government says it is committed to improve cooperation, and I think there's also increasing understanding in the government that there is a need to increase cooperation.
I was speaking to our correspondent in Berlin, Daniel Pelz.
And going back to our top story, where we've been talking about the United Nations Security Council, which is expected to renew MONUSCO's mandate in the Democratic Republic of Congo. We still have many more of your comments and feedback on that. Kevin Dudona says the question is, what was the UN's mission to the DRC and how far have they been able to realize the laid down objectives? And he goes on to say, if they have a reason of extension, he goes on to say, hashtag yes.
Okay, and Dako Lins Perara, you're saying they should assess their achievements, and if it has not been beneficial, as we all know, then they are the problem. Well, I mean, we are repeating the very same comments, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that people are not really happy to have this mandate still extended.
Yeah, but he has a point. There's pros mm-hmm. and cons to both. And
right.
John Otter says, well, if their mission is not making any meaningful impact, I advise the UN to look the other way around.
And Menti Welstberg, you're saying UN is there because of gold and other minerals. Mm-hmm. This, I remember this, somebody said this as well.
Yeah, and King Lumasa says they have to accomplish what they were mandated to do. And he goes on to say that is to stabilize that nation, nothing more.
Well, I mean, there are lots of comments you guys have been writing and sharing out there. We can read them later on if we can, and if we have time. But for now, I think we should leave it this way.
For sure. Welcome back to Africa Link with me, Zipporah Nyambura.
And I am Assumpta Lados. Remember, we are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. So you can drop us a comment and we will read it whenever we can.
Still to come, street begging has been on the rise in northern Nigeria. Can a campaign to stop this practice change the perception?
Let them improve our lives. We want to be empowered. If they empower us and still see us on the street, then let them punish us.
Well, looking forward to hear why efforts to stop it has not succeeded before.
For sure, but first we head to Algeria, where calls for 82-year-old President Abdelaziz Bouteflika to step down mounted today after a critical ally of his coalition joined the army in calling for his exit.
A statement from the National Rally for Democracy, RND, a member of the ruling coalition, said Bouteflika should be declared unfit for office. Bouteflika has come under mounting pressure to step down since his decision to seek a fifth term as president, despite rarely being seen in public since a 2013 stroke. Isaac Mugabe has more.
Undeterred protesters piled up pressure on President Abdelaziz Bouteflika to resign, accusing his regime of trying to stage manage his exit. The army's powerful chief of staff, Lieutenant General Ahmed Gaid Salah, set the ball rolling in a speech this week, saying the solution to the crisis would be the departure of the president on health grounds. However, the protesters are demanding more. They say they are tired of constant corruption, nepotism and economic mismanagement. The leader of the protesters, Mustafa Bouchachi, a lawyer and activist, says that the plan to force the president to step down on medical grounds was not enough.
This regime can't continue to draw the plans of our future. We are asking them to leave, that's all. Algerian men and women can lead strong institutions that govern their future. The youth want to carry on the message of the martyrs because we freed the land in 1962, but we weren't able to free the people. This demonstration by my colleagues and brothers is asking the regime to leave in order to let Algerians plan their future in complete democracy.
Facing the biggest challenge to his rule, Bouteflika reversed a plan to seek a fifth term, postponed elections, and promised to introduce greater freedoms. But he stopped short of stepping down. His inaction infuriated many Algerians who want to do away with veterans of the 1954 to 1962 War of Independence against France. They include military officers and business tycoons who have dominated Algerian politics for decades, a message echoed by many of the protesters.
We went out today, and we have only one aim: leave us alone. We don't want you to give us 3,000 dirhams. Don't offer me a job. Just leave. You lied to me for 20 years.
That report was compiled by Isaac Mugabe. And of course, you have been getting your comments on that. We did ask, could it be that Africa's oldest leaders like Bouteflika, Equatorial Guinea Obiang Nguema, Cameroon's Paul Biya, and Uganda's Yoweri Museveni, among others, do not trust the youth to take the leadership mantle in their respective countries? And of course, Assumpta, we have gotten lots of reactions on that.
And I love them. I like them. Yes.
Yeah, I'll start with the first one from Rick Angelo, who says, as far as Cameroon is concerned, authorities are using the diabolic divide and rule strategy based on ethnic groups in the country like this, he says, and he's assured to run for life with the support of his brothers in quotes.
Right. And you, Osei Ogieman, you have written my favorite comment. You're saying that most African leaders are power drunk. This is pure selfishness and they're drunk. I mean, their quest to continue looting and sharing the coffers of the state. Leaving office, they fear that their rot will be exposed, which will further lead to prosecution and imprisonment. Well, this is your comment, Osei. I can't say more.
Yeah, and Cyrus Cassius, to wrap up, says the international community must help to remove all these dictators. So thank you very much for your comments. You can also contribute right there on DW Africa.
On the spot.
to Northern Nigeria now. Northern Nigeria has been battling with street begging for years. Efforts by NGOs and previous governments to stop the habit have not been successful. However, a group of young people have launched a campaign called Let's Stop Begging, spearheaded by a popular Nigerian cartoonist, Mustafa Bulama.
The group wants the government to set up more information centers and boost skills of the street beggars to give them a source of livelihood. Our correspondent Zahradin Umar reports, is on the ground, and as he tells us, there are many factors that have led to the rising number of street beggars in the region.
An elderly disabled person begging for money in the heart of Kaduna metropolis. This Arabic recitation is a call to action for people to give charity. In this part of Nigeria, assisting this kind of beggars is seen by many, including some Islamic scholars, as an act of worship. But Mustafa Bulama, the founder of Let's Stop Begging campaign, says they came up with the movement in order to change the perception and to challenge the narrative.
Begging is not part of Islam. While Islam encourages people to give sadaqah, to give charity to people who are poor and less privileged, people with disability, or people who are not able to fend for themselves, at the same time, Islam does not encourage anyone, whether the poor or the disabled person, to go out and beg.
Begging in northern Nigeria has taken different forms. The popular one is almajirenchi, which is done by little children who are attending Islamic madrasas known here as sangaya schools. Their parents send the children to these sangaya schools, most often without food provision. Their main source of food is begging from house to house. This is Ibrahim Almajiri, a 7-year-old sangaya pupil who begs for food.
I depend on begging for survival. I roam about in this area to get food. Every day, I come out as early as 7:30 in the morning to look for breakfast. I usually get food, but sometimes I'm not lucky and have to go back to my school on an empty stomach.
This is Kano Road, a popular place in Kaduna metropolis that serves as the center of begging in the city. Hundreds of people with different forms of disability come here from sunrise till sunset begging for survival. I asked Abdullahi Ismail, one of the beggars, what he thinks about the new movement to remove them from the streets.
Let them improve our lives. We want to be empowered. If they empower us and still see us on the street, then let them punish us. We have been telling them that disabled people in the southern parts of Nigeria do not take to the street begging for survival. Why? Because in the south, disabled people are being empowered.
The Let's Stop Begging campaign is gradually gaining momentum. Zainab Ibrahim Jumari is among the female activists that believe in this latest campaign.
What we want to see is that no child, no adult, no physically challenged person roams the street with a bowl or a sack in the name of begging.
The young activists say they will take their campaign to the street in all the 19 states of northern Nigeria.
That is Zahradin Umar reporting all the way from Kaduna.
We do have lots of comments as well. We did post a post saying that, but in a country that boasts of being the leading oil producer in Africa and the continent's biggest economy, why would it people resort to street begging? Henry Olwana Okelo, you're saying there's millions of acres of productive land in Africa left behind due to exodus by youngsters to cities for millennium jobs. Until agriculture is given a serious attention, beggars will grow at the expense of political gain.
And Chris Ndwogu also has his opinion on that, says begging is synonymous with the North as a result of the Almajiri. He says Almajiri is a system of Islamic education practiced in northern Nigeria. Former President Goodluck Jonathan built several schools and withdrew the youths from their streets to begging, but those schools have been converted to mosques and those youth have returned to their begging professions. Thank you very much for that comment.
Umar Mustafa, you're saying corruption and disjointed policies. In Africa, we make over-ambitious and uncoordinated policies. Few individuals get richer at the expense of the poor, hence the poverty gap further widening. Yeah. We have so much those comments of yours. We'll read them right here at any time when we have time.
Living Planet Africa.
We now head to Western Kenya, which harbors Lake Victoria, Africa's largest and the world's second largest freshwater lake. The lake, which is home to over 200 species of fish, is choking in water hyacinth, a form of weed that has now covered over 10,000 hectares of the lake.
However, there is one Nigerian who is willing to change that story. Andrew Wasike caught up with Achenyo Idachaba, who is using the weed for a better cause.
It appears like a thick green carpet on the lake. Water hyacinth is said to spread fast because it produces large quantities of seeds, which are viable for up to 30 years. Its effects have been detrimental, destroying marine ecosystems and the economic status of the community, which relies on fishing as a source of livelihood. Timothy Omolo is a fisher. He tells me it's dealt them a big blow.
It's also caused the accidents, a lot of accidents during when this affect. Some fishermen are stuck. It also sucks oxygen in the water. That's led the fish to die and cannot survive well. It's only that the mudfish that survive, but other species cannot survive well.
Jack Otieno says the losses they have encountered have been enormous.
We found all our fishing cages surrounded by the water hyacinth. You could find around 10 to 13 dead fish in each cage, and in all cages, it could be somewhere between 5,000 to 10,000 dead fish. This means that our total losses each day would amount to $300.
Achenyo Idachaba from Nigeria is determined to change that narrative, traveling all the way from West to East Africa to offer her remedy on dealing with the noxious weed. Achenyo harvests and weaves the weed, transforming it into marketable products such as baskets, clothes, purses, carpets, among other handicrafts. I caught up with her in Nairobi, where she's training other artisans to do the same.
We harvest the water hyacinth, which is an environmental menace on the waterways. We dry it, and then we take the dry weight. The plant's actually 95% water, and then woven into cordage or rope, which is now used as a basis for a number of the home decor items.
Achenyo tells me her passion for the environment is what brought her to Western Kenya to learn more and tackle the hyacinth problem. Achenyo is calling on other Kenyans to join her initiative, which will control the invasive weed within 10 years. For her, there is only one rule. People should see the problem as a blessing in disguise.
I would say that, you know, going the handicrafts option is one way. You can go beyond furniture, you can make big pieces, you can make small pieces. This laptop sleeve is actually also made from water hyacinth, this resource which we have in abundance here in Kenya and 50 other countries across the world.
The Lake Victoria Environment Management Project spent over $250 million in its cleanup phase, which took 16 years. Still, the task ahead is bigger since they hardly managed to remove half of the harmful weed and 10,000 hectares of the lake is covered by the hyacinth.
Andrew Wasike with that very inspiring story of Achenyo Idachaba.
Make your voice count. Join DW Africa on Facebook and comment on the stories there. You could get a mention on Africa Link, which broadcasts live on Facebook. That's DW Africa.
Oh, well, I mean, that story, I thought it was quite interesting. I would really love to get that, a little bit of those, you know, arty craft from those what Von Achenyo she's getting from, I mean, getting from the sea and...
Yes, Assumpta, it's a case of creativity, innovation, and I think the people, if 10 of them do that, then we'll not have this problem anymore. Thank you very much for listening to Africa Link. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
I'm Assumpta Latus. Thank you for listening.
For Minds.